Hello and welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast with host Emma Dark. In the final episode of the Customer Experience Podcast, Emma chats with Kate Birtles from Biffa. Whilst almost everyone won't deem waste management as something all that CX-y, the way we think about it has never been more important when you think about its environmental impact and how it affects the customer. Kate outlines how her new customer team ensures they are always walking in their customer's shoes, getting out on the front line and getting to know them, whilst cascading the customer's voice right across the business. Lots to take in here, so with no further ado, here's Emma and Kate.
Kate, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast. I'm thrilled to have you as my guest today. We've been trying to do this for a little while, haven't we?
Just a while, yeah. A few things getting in the way. But yeah. Yes, good to be here. Thank
yeah,
you.
Good to have you here. How are you today?
Yeah, good, yes. Today's Freedom Day, so okay. Yeah, all feels like yeah. We're getting back to whatever normal is.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah, good stuff. So I thought we could centre the topic today around driving kind of customer experience in a sector that could be deemed as not very CX-y. Mm-hmm. So you're currently working at Biffa and leading the customer strategy there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, waste management, you know, can be seen as something that, you know, how do you have a good customer experience in that sector? So I thought, actually, let's bring it to life for the listeners to really see that, you know, no matter what sector you're in, there's absolutely a customer strategy at the heart. So so let's start off with you sharing with the listeners, you know, a bit more about yourself, mm-hmm. your role at Biffa, and ultimately why you're so passionate about driving the customer strategy.
Yeah, sure. So, you're quite right. Waste industry is not particularly CX-y. And I think, you know, when I look back over my career, none of the roles that I've had in any of the industries would be classic kind of customer experience type roles. But I think it is, to your point, really important to recognise that wherever you have a customer interaction, there is the opportunity to make that really good experience. So I joined Biffa around 18 months ago, which is really scary. To think that time's gone so quickly. And if you cast your mind back 18 months ago, that was as we were just coming out of the first lockdown. So a really odd time to be joining an organisation, particularly an operational, logistical operation organisation. So I joined just as we were ramping up. We were just getting back out to customers. Our customers were opening back up. And we were trying to get everything back to whatever the new normal was in that very early stages of the pandemic. So my role that I undertake at Biffa is looking after two customer contact centres. And then I also have a very newly formed CX team, which I'm really excited about. So we've morphed a team to be focused much more on customer experience, whereas their traditional role was much more process improvement, quality, the more standard things that you would sort of expect to see in more traditional companies. So that's what I'm there to do at Biffa. It's been a very challenging time, shall we say.
Yeah. I think joining any organisation kind of in the middle of the pandemic, mm-hmm. or certainly, you know, right now, it's different, isn't it? And it mm-hmm. does kind of, you know, make you have to dig deep in terms of, right, what's my purpose here? What am I going to do? Because knowing that things aren't quite how they were before, or maybe how they're going to be. So all good. So customer experience at Biffa then, what does that mean to you? So how do you deliver customer experience at Biffa?
Yeah, it's the standard thing for any customers in any organisation. There is a very basic side to what Biffa does, which is we go out and we collect waste. So there is absolutely the opportunity there around making sure that that is an invisible service for customers, that, you know, that we turn up when they expect us to turn up and we do what they're expecting us to do when they want us to do it. So from a very basic level, it's the same as buying a pair of shoes. You order a pair of shoes, you expect the shoes to come, you expect them to be the ones that you ordered. It's no different from a waste perspective. But I think the really cool and interesting thing around waste is that you can go much further, much broader than that with customers. And it's about that education piece. It's about being a partner with customers to help them maximise what they want to achieve as an organisation. And I think from a waste perspective, with everybody's aims and desires around sustainability and looking after the environment and just being a much more responsible organisation, we have a really key role to play in that, to help customers understand where they can make improvements and differences. But the basic, you know, you need to get that bit right first.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you talked then about the environment. I mean, David Attenborough inspired all of us, you know, in the previous years around just really saving the planet and looking mm-hmm. after our planet. And I guess for Biffa, you know, the purpose behind waste management recycling, mm-hmm. you know, has become a real important kind of factor of people wanting to know more about it, wanting to get involved yeah. in it now as well. You know, can you explain, I suppose, with that purpose for Biffa, how does that really benefit your customers? Mm-hmm. So if you've, you know, that's what you do, you mm-hmm. recycle, you know, you've got your kind of waste management services, but, you know, being part of that, mm-hmm. looking after the planet, if mm-hmm. you like, you know, in the day-to-day as to the services that you guys provide, how does that benefit the end customer?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the key things to draw out there is our purpose as an organisation is to change the way people think about waste. So as a consumer, as a household, you know, you just want the waste to be gone. You don't want to think about it. The fact that now we're able to, you know, put our recycling in different bins and we're able to segregate what we do as households is no different from how small businesses operate and, you know, to a much better degree how corporates operate. But I think, you know, what Biffa, the mission that we have around changing the way people think about waste is that we look at the waste hierarchy. So if you consider the hierarchy as a sort of an upside down triangle, we start at the top with that. How do we stop things getting into the waste cycle to start with? So what can we do to prevent waste being waste in the first place? Then we kind of move down to that recyclable element, which, you know, we are all becoming much more familiar with, but it is a very complicated area and kind of quite difficult to navigate for some of our customers. Then you come into how do you recover energy from waste? So rather than burying it in the ground, what can we do with that waste not burying it in the ground, using it for energy purposes? But you will always have a place for waste that does need to go to landfill, and it's recognising what that is and making sure that you're minimising that and doing that in the most sensible way for the environment. So for our customers, it's about education, it's about helping and assisting and not making things overly complicated, trying to keep things simple, and sharing, you know, the knowledge and experience that we have in the sector, as well as, you know, kind of helping to form government thinking around this area. So yeah, there's lots of opportunities, but it's trying to make it, you know, go back to your first point, it's not very CX-y, it's not a very sexy thing to talk about, but it's making it so that it's accessible and interesting to all customers rather than those that have a really high sustainability agenda.
Yeah. And I guess with that in mind, the complexity, because mm-hmm. you know, we have it here in the office, we've got recycle bins, and you know, often we get told off because it's in the wrong one. Yeah. And I guess, you know, how do you as a leader approach kind of helping the organisation break down some of that complexity for your customers mm-hmm. and help your team that are serving those customers, you know, really yeah. cut through that complexity as well?
Yeah, so, and, you know, this will be the same for any organisation with any customers. It's understanding who your customer is. So when I think about the sales team that I have that sit under me, this is about having those sensible, purposeful conversations that we're not just trying to sell them a service, that we're understanding what their need is, mm-hmm. and then we're looking at our services and suggesting what is appropriate based on that customer need, rather than going, okay, we've got all of this stuff, what would be most suitable for you? You know, kind of take a pick and mix view. It's mm-hmm. for us to be able to educate. And certainly from the corporate perspective, you know, the level of detail that those account managers have on their sectors, so that they really understand what the needs are of the customers and can support and help and make sure that they're aware of all of the services that we have to offer. Yeah. But it is, you know, it is complex. We kind of come back to the household thing. A lot of that is driven by what local councils want to deliver and how they want to deliver that service. So there is certainly a long way to go in terms of cutting through complexity, certainly as an end customer consumer.
Yeah, and I guess digitalisation, you know, mm-hmm. how, you know, what examples have kind of you've got in terms of the customer piece around where you have digitalized mm-hmm. the services or experiences for your customers? I mean, some of it is like literally truck rolls and yeah. going to physical, you know, kind of residential or mm-hmm. business properties. But what kind of level of digitalization have Biffa managed to kind of achieve?
Yeah, and you know, this is something that we are not overly mature in this space compared to other organisations, but certainly it's something that we are really invested in. We have had a customer portal for a number of years where customers are able to go on and self-serve, but that's not really groundbreaking. That's kind of a given. That's what customers expect. And what we are doing is we're actually further developing that to make sure that it's fit for all of our customers and that it is a much nicer user experience. But the technology and the pieces has been there for a number of years. The other thing that we did during the pandemic was introduce an e-commerce platform so that customers could truly buy online from start to end what services that they want. And you kind of at the start of it, you go, well, that, you know, should be a fairly simple proposition. But again, when you kind of consider how do you understand a customer needs from an e-commerce platform without bombarding them with a million questions and turning the whole experience into a nightmare, we've really looked at, okay, what customers should be able to go through that as an end-to-end and making sure that we've got the right information for them to do that, and where they need extra support, how do we intervene in that journey to give them the right information to make sure the end result is what they need. So not relying solely on digital, but making sure that we're using that and kind of moving between, you know, people and digital.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that blend is kind of where most, you know, kind of businesses are now. Mm-hmm. Is you know, last week talking to someone else in the industry and just kind of actually how the human element of service is mm-hmm. actually become important again as a result of the pandemic, because mm-hmm. you know, just how we were all starved from that for so long, we realized how important it was mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, having the need for both really is definitely important. So you were really excited talking to me earlier about your team and this new CX kind of you know, kind of arm to it mm-hmm. outside of the traditional core support mm-hmm. services mm-hmm. that you would have had, you know, wrapped around your customers team. So what does this new CX team do, and how is that kind of helping the customer agenda and your customers?
Yeah, so when I joined Biffa, I was really keen, obviously I was remote, so the normal things that you would do in an organisation, so sitting and listening to calls, getting out and seeing customers, you know, going on a what we term as a truck day, so seeing what it's like to be out there face to face with customers. I was very much hamstrung in that area because I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. So kind of supplemented that by having a very, very low budget approach to just, okay, I need to know what customers are feeling and what they think about Biffa. So we introduced a very simple tactical survey so that we could start to gauge, okay, where are customers at. What we have done now is we've extended that and we've partnered with Qualtrics, so they're helping us to understand that voice of customer and helping us with our voice of customer programs. And what that's enabled us to do is we had mapped the customer journeys, and the insight that we had from these surveys and from call listening, we were adding the emotion and the stories against those customer journeys. But now with the partner in Qualtrics, we've been much been able to dig deep into that data and that insight to understand that better. So the CX team, that's kind of their holy grail. They absolutely dive into this information all the time. But alongside that, I have Six Sigma experts that sit in that team that are going, okay, but this is a process problem. This is, and then they will go and kind of look at the process and see where we can drive efficiencies from a customer lens. So yeah, it's a really exciting time, particularly for that team where, you know, if you're only kind of looking at processes in isolation without that customer lens, you're not looking at it from outside in, you're constantly looking inside to go, okay, how can we, you know, drive out cost? This is a much healthier way of approaching the business, I think.
Yeah, fantastic. And I guess how much you are, with that in mind, how mature are your kind of customer maps then in terms of just, you know, are you really hot on capturing all of the kind of key touch points across the different journeys and, you know, really looking at that regularly just to make sure the service that then you are delivering is against those value propositions that you'd intended and set out at the start.
So in terms of the mapping the journey as it stands today, absolutely, that's well understood, documented, and we kind of understand where those touch points are. What we do have from that is a whole raft of initiatives, and we have methodologies around how we prioritize those initiatives that fall out of that. What we don't have, and what we're not mature in that space, is okay, so blank sheet of paper, what should the customer experience look like, and how do we want to design that from the ground up? There is, from my perspective, there is an element of saying, okay, where we know there is customer pain, can we not sit on our hands and wait for a big investment in some new technology or a big shift in what we need to do? Because there is some really easy low-hanging fruit here that we need to just get on and fix, because that will make the customer's life better tomorrow rather than in a year's time. So it's trying to balance those things and making sure that we're making a difference and making changes, which sometimes can feel very small, but the impact on the customer ultimately is significant.
So. Yeah. And Qualtrics and the new kind of insight and analytics tools that you've mm-hmm. got, and this team that, as you say, that's their kind of holy grail in terms of the purpose for them, as mm-hmm. to them knowing what they're going after. How do you cascade that across the organisation so that customer heartbeat and voice of customer mm-hmm. is company-wide across the whole firm and not just within your team and your...
Yeah, and that has been a real challenge, and that is where you kind of come back to, okay, we're operating post-pandemic but still in strange times. As an organisation, we faced challenges that many organisations that have HGV drivers in have faced. We've had a series of challenges aside from the pandemic over the last year, and you kind of go, okay, if I go out and do a big bang, exciting, this is what we're talking about, customer, everybody should get excited about this. The appetite for that just wasn't there last year. People were tired, people have had enough, and going out with something that would take up a proportion of brain space, if nothing else, was not the right approach to take. So we are doing that in a much more low level way. So sharing that insight, so making sure it's available if people want to find it. We are communicating that out in positive ways around what we've changed, what's been exciting, and then having a central area where people can dig into it if they have that space to do it. Mm-hmm. Going into next year will be a whole different different proposition, but just in this kind of holding pattern, are we in the office? Are we out of the office? Are we locked down? Are we back out? It didn't feel that was the right time to do any sort of big bang customer experience work.
Yeah, makes sense. And I guess, driving a customer-centric culture mm-hmm. is hard, because, people think that the customer service director is responsible mm-hmm. for customer solely, and that the customer team, everything starts and ends there. And that's true in lots of ways mm-hmm. because of just the operational side of, that agenda. But actually, true customer centricity comes from everyone feeling responsible and it being quite, tangible in terms mm-hmm. of the way that people talk and behave. Yeah. Talk to me about your experience of that, in or out of BIFA, in terms mm-hmm. of, how you've approached getting that customer centricity and the buy-in from the whole organisation, really, to fly that customer flag.
Yeah, so I think, if I start with BIFA, BIFA's a really interesting organisation in that I haven't met anybody who's not passionate about the customer. Okay. So there isn't anybody that's kind of going, no, I not interested, I've got my bit of the organisation to get on with. Everybody is very focused on customer. The challenge of that is that everybody's perception of what is the right thing to do for customer isn't necessarily consistent across the piece. So you can point to amazing examples of brilliant customer experience that's going on, but then you can equally point to disastrous things where if one thing's gone wrong, 100 things have gone wrong for that customer. So for me, it's around that consistency piece and looking at how do we drive that, which will be a whole myriad of different approaches. Where we've started with that is to be really clear on what that CX vision is and getting buy-in from Michael, our CEO, and taking that sort of down through the organisation to kind of socialise it, to kind of say, you know, does this make sense to you? We have a brilliant team at Biffa called the Biffa Involvement Group, where people are right across the organisation come together to help form what we're doing as an organisation. So they help to design the values, and they're really instrumental in changing, you know, the shape of those, that they were meaningful. And so we've recently taken the CX vision to that group to sort of say, you know, this is what we're thinking. Does this work for you? Does it make any sense? Are you scratching your head and thinking, what on earth are you on about? So it's those kind of initiatives that that I think is how you win hearts and minds, because people need to be part of it. It can't be myself or and my head of CX going, okay, this is what we're doing, right, let's roll it out. It needs to be a participative way of approaching it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the customer? How involved does the customer, you know, get in reviewing some of those changes that have been proposed, or just bring into life the pain points that the team are identifying through, you know, the Voice the Customer program? Do you get customers in at all? Do you have customer labs? Or
so we don't get them in because of
the obvious.
Virtually
in.
Yes, but we have. So a great example of that is the development that I spoke to on the customer portal. So before we kicked off the rework of that technology, we initially went to a group of customers to say, okay, do you use the portal now? If you do, what do you think of it? Also, customers that we know don't use the portal, why don't you use it? So we were really clear in terms of where our customers' minds were at. We've then continued with that customer panel approach as we've gone through development, and they are absolutely part of that testing, the UAT piece, to kind of help us shape and make sure that it is what they want rather than what we think they want, which, you know, sometimes it's obvious, but you know, there's always something in there you go, oh yeah, I didn't realise that was that
exactly
that, you know, relevant to customers.
A little nugget.
Yes, lovely.
So your team, you know, I guess if you think about the evolution, not just the pandemic and everything that's been happening in the last 2 years, but have you found, I mean, you know, coming into Biffa from other organisations even, but the training and the coaching and what you need from the team that are supporting that customer agenda, has that evolved and massively? Is it pretty much the same? I mean, you've got a different shape of team now, and obviously using the insight to drive their agenda, but you know, has that evolved at all? Do you, in terms of a leader serving your people and the people that are supporting your customer, how you onboard them, nurture them, look after them, train them, has that changed?
Yeah, so I think from my perspective of being in customer service for way too many years to mention, there's definitely been that move over the years to not being kind of a glorified receptionist, so not just being the middle person that fires things to various other departments to fix and just getting the earache in the middle. So certainly from a Biffa point of view, that's where we're driving the team. The training and the development angle is something that I'm hugely passionate about, but again, it's just been so hard with just trying to keep things going. So it's okay, do you take people off and give them some amazing training, or do we just get them to answer the phone, because that's where the real need is at the minute. So there is lots of work to do there around training and development, I think, in customer service teams across the board. We as customer service people seem to have much more information because of technology, which is great. But you know, when I listen to customer calls, and this is not just Biffa, you know, other customer calls, and you hear, you know, it being spouted to the customer, when the customer just doesn't care, they don't care where, you know, where your driver is, or what, you know, what your inside processes are. Myself as a customer the other day trying to book a service for my car, oh my gosh, so difficult. And the, you know, the person I was speaking to was absolutely lovely on the phone, but telling me, you know, warts and all, this is what's going on. I don't care, just can you just book it in? So I think there is this piece that we want customer service people to be knowledgeable, we want them to really be able to help customers, but we need to be really balancing that with, okay, yeah, customers don't need to know all the dirty laundry. No. It's not really that useful. And how do we temper that to make sure that, you know, you've got a successful customer outcome at the end of the day?
And I guess, you know, your example there of, you know, having a bad experience just booking a service, I think there's just been so much of, you know, that about poor services as a result mm-hmm. of the pandemic, and some of it is rightly justified, you know, around capacity issues, the people there to serve the customer, mm-hmm. and you know, all and sounds from what you've shared, you've had mm-hmm. things outside, you know, of mm-hmm. the pandemic, obviously the situation with drivers, etc. mm-hmm. as well, just to add to that kind of pain, really. So following on from the example you just shared as well, I think what I'm finding at the minute that so many people are using COVID as an excuse mm-hmm. for bad service, and mm-hmm. some of that's justified, right? Mm-hmm. We, you know, you use the example of things outside of your control with the HGV drivers, you know, real life situation, you know, mm-hmm. your capacity is reduced, mm-hmm. but it does feel like some brands and organisations have absolutely exploited it mm-hmm. to reduce costs, mm-hmm. You know, to do things that haven't had the customer at the heart mm-hmm. of that agenda. You know, what's your view on that in terms of what you've experienced, even as a consumer?
Yeah, so I would hate to think that people are doing that kind of in that way, but I'm sure it does happen in some organisations. I think the thing for me is you know, we've been given all this amazing tech, right? And we get all excited about this tech, but we don't always necessarily put it in place as it was intended, or it hasn't been thought through fully. So from, you know, if I use that booking my car in for a service, that should have been an amazing opportunity to go online, select a couple of dates, put it out to the service thing, and then get a confirmation back. That didn't work. So the response I got back was, well, we've booked you in for this date, which was none of the dates I'd selected. Mm-hmm. Phone this number if it doesn't work. So then had to wait ages to get through, because they're obviously not geared up then to take the call, because they're relying on the technology to provide the service. So then you get through to the call person eventually, try again, and it doesn't work again. And then you know, when I phone back, it's like, well, actually, there's no connection between that booking system and what availability is in the garage. And I kind of go, well, that, you know, that kind of feels very familiar. And I think there's lots of organisations that have kind of relied on technology and maybe reduced headcount or resource because you've got this technology. That was the case for having it. But then it hasn't been kind of seamlessly end to end, or they haven't thought of all the eventualities that mean that for some customers you end up having a much worse experience than if you just resourced a contact centre. Which I'm not saying, you know, it's people aren't the answer to everything, but I think, you know, it's trying to get that balance right.
You're right, and it almost seems like a basic as well, doesn't it, in terms of just walking in the shoes of the customer to kind of think, right, let's not just map out the happy mm-hmm. path here, things will go wrong, and let's mm-hmm. just make sure that all still works. And you know, it is surprising how often, you know, we all hit a bit of a wall with a process where we think, well, someone's just not tested that this still works as it was intended, or it's fit for purpose anymore. So I guess that continuous improvement mm-hmm. and someone constantly looking at through the customer lens what that experience looks and feels like is essential, really.
It's like chatbots, isn't it? That's my other, that's a soapbox of mine, you know. Chatbots sound like the amazing answer to everything, don't they? But personally, I've never met one that I like. And you just kind of, you go, okay, you understand the sentiment because it means the customer can get that instant information, but invariably it's not the information the customer actually wants.
And I think you're right, because I think, you know, exactly what you said there was around the technology, the business case stacked up, and it's about deploying it. But mm-hmm. actually, you know, do people take the time to get the customer involved in mm-hmm. the design thinking? Mm-hmm. Have they got, you know, people on the front line involved mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. close to the customer, and just, you know, not seeing it as a technology project, but seeing it as a customer experience project mm-hmm. where you've got cross-functional teams involved?
Absolutely.
We had a guest on the CX podcast bringing to life around how actually the bot became the primary channel for mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. and they were getting 4 out of 5 stars in terms of ease of use.
I mean, at least you know who they are.
The very group. But it was amazing because, to your point, that's not normal.
No.
But they've invested in the customer labs, and they've got their frontline staff involved, cross-functional teams. Mm-hmm. It's a business-wide initiative mm-hmm. rather than a technology implementation, and mm-hmm. the change is more successful as a result, really. So earlier on, Kate, you shared how, you know, rightly so, you had challenges outside of the organisation, mm-hmm. Out of your control, which meant it wasn't the right time to be jazz hands and sharing mm-hmm. some of the great insight from your new tool mm-hmm. Across the business far and wide, mm-hmm. but it was there for people to see. But actually, I guess, you know, in terms of every day, people turning up. You know, you said people are passionate mm-hmm. in your organisation, but how, in you know, in your experience as a leader, how do you make that kind of rhythm and heartbeat mm-hmm. kind of alive in an organisation where people do feel that they're there to serve the customer, mm-hmm. they see the part they play mm-hmm. in that, mm-hmm. And they kind of wear that badge with honour, really, and, mm. and it's kind of just how they show up mm-hmm. Daily. How as a leader do you make that happen? How do you kind of really ensure that it's happening across the organisation?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a way to go from a BIFA standpoint, but I think it comes down to what you measure. Making sure that what you are measuring is things that customers actually care about, and that they're real indicators of the health of our customer relationships, which sometimes is easier said than done, and doesn't, you know, it doesn't, it's not always pleasant reading or pleasant understanding, but I think that, you know, making sure that we're not measuring things that drive sort of anti-customer behaviour because it feels like it's the right thing to do for the organisation. So when I've worked with somebody in the CX industry who uses cinemas as the example, which I always use to the team because it's something you can really tangibly get hold of. And you think, well, as a cinema, you're kind of interested in how many bums on seats, how much popcorn you've sold, how many varieties of film you had up. So you'll have these key performance indicators that you think are, you know, showing how well you're performing. From a customer point of view, they don't care if the cinema's full. Sure. They care if the film they want to see is on, but they don't care if you've got a wide variety, and certainly don't care about your popcorn sales. What they care about is, you know, how easy is it to park to when I get there? You know, can I go for a meal before or after the film? And, you know, it's things like that that, you know, as an organisation, you kind of need to take a step back and go, okay, what is it that we're actually measuring here, and what is it that customers actually care about? And that's part of the journey that we're on now, which is just kind of holding that mirror up and saying, okay, are these genuinely customer facing or customer interesting measurements, or are there some things that we need to change and address there? So it's and again, it's trying to get that balance right, because there's obviously things as an organization we need to be caring about, but it's making sure that we've got that customer lens on, you know, particularly those performance things that affect, you know, how people do their job every day and the behaviors around that.
Yeah. And do you feel that, you know, the organisation as a whole has enough customer metrics so that people can see the impact that they're having to the end customer?
Yeah, so I think we do. I think, as I say, there is absolutely progress that we need to make in that space. So I don't think we've got it quite right. Mm-hmm. You know, the setup for BIFA is that, you know, from a depot. So the depots are the guys that are planning the collections, the guys that are going out and making those collections. They care so much about their customers mm-hmm. to the point that I say, you know, customer service, don't speak to them. This is our customer. We're dealing with it. We'll sort it all out, which is fantastic. But it's them making sure that where there are these, you know, we're a big organisation, so you can't do everything bespoke. So where there are these overreaching processes, that we're measuring the right things in there to drive the right behaviours across the piece, rather than, you know, those specific, you know, going back to that inconsistency piece again.
Yeah, avoiding the silos.
Yes.
Yeah. But I like that thought of, you know, they're their customers.
Oh, they really passionate, really passionate. And, you know, you don't want customer service getting in and messing it up, which, you know, it's fantastic, but it's, again, that consistency piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess in terms of who you look at for innovation and where you've seen great examples of customer experience, can you bring to life some brands or companies that you've interacted with where you think, actually, yeah, regardless of sector, they're ones to watch, they're doing it well?
So I mean, I read a huge amount, and I'm, you know, listen to podcasts all the time, and kind of constantly wowed by going, oh God, everybody else has kind of got it nailed, and everyone else is kind of doing really well. You know, the obvious one is Zappos, that, you know, traditionally absolutely hold in awe because of the way they were able to take it from a human perspective. I'm a human being dealing with a human being, and therefore I can use my own brain, because just because I work in customer service doesn't mean my brain has been removed. And they, you know, that really agile way of being able to respond to customers and being able to personalise, that we get so hung up about in CX, personalised meaning just matching how that customer is interacting with you and being, you know, genuine with that customer. So I always have Zappos in my head as something that I would aspire greatly to achieve. Mm-hmm. You know, having that freedom of people to use their own brains and just be, you know, decent human beings. Yeah, which is not to say they're not now, but you know, that is the nugget for me from a Zappos. I think from a UK perspective, I'm a huge fan of John Lewis, always have been, love the model and the approach that they have there. You know, that kind of that no nonsense, that security that you know that if you've got an issue as a consumer, that they'll just sort it out. And Costco kind of falls into that same bracket for me, that, you know, it's not jazzy and beautiful displays, but it is, you know, that, you know, if you have any issues, that there's not going to be a problem sorting it out. But yes, I think, you know, all the usual suspects I kind of always look at and go, oh. But I also make the point at Biffa that we are not trying to be Disney.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have had the very lucky privilege of going on a Disney holiday and being absolutely wowed by it. But that's, you know, it's taking the elements of that. We're not putting bows on bins. We're not trying to wow our customers. We just need to get the service right and kind of cause no problems for our customers. Yeah. Or if there are problems, because it's a service, that we fix them really quickly with little pain.
That's a really, really important point, actually, around just remembering what your value proposition is, the customer value proposition, and staying true to that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, getting that right consistently, you use that word, you know, a few times, actually... Often customers don't want to be wowed. They just want you to deliver consistently on the expectation that you set them up front, what it feels like interacting with your business. So if you get that right, actually, you will have a lot of happy customers.
Yeah.
You know, the wow moments are kind of almost the unexpected, really. The thrill that they're not expecting. Therefore, if you do it or you don't, you've just got to do the basics right. Agreed. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned some of the challenges, this through the podcast today. But are there any other kind of key pain points from your perspective driving the customer strategy where you've really had to overcome to be able to continue to drive that customer centric agenda?
Yeah. So I think this will resonate with lots of people. It is around that tangible element of the work that we do. So we know there are changes that we want to make because you know in your gut it is the right thing to do for the customer. But then from a, you know, if we look at it as purely as a business case, it's like, okay, how do I make this tangibly effective to get people's attention? Because there is, you know, there is something very difficult around saying, look, in my gut it's the right thing to do, can I have some money please, just doesn't really wash in business. So I think that has been something that I've worked really hard on with the team, to say, okay, it can't be the be all and end all, because some things are just the right thing to do. You know, if I take our portal re-implementation that we're doing at the moment, that was not done on the business case that it's going to, you know, revolutionise the contact centre and, you know, going to make lots of efficiencies. It was done because it was the right thing to do. So we're not, you know, not hell bent on making sure things are tangible, but there is, you know, in terms of credibility of what you are delivering to the organisation, being able to assign that to customer attrition, being able to assign that to reduction in contact, being able to assign it to something meaningful that sits outside of, you know, the people that are really, you know, oh, please, can we just do it? Because it's just the right thing to do. So it's trying to get the measures and get those tangible numbers and the data to support what we're trying to achieve. That's probably been my biggest challenge. And then, you know, as I say, just, you know, you're kind of all focused on what we want to deliver. I think it was this time last year that we kind of started to enter into a steel shortage, which you need steel to make bins. So if you don't have any bins, then that makes it quite tricky to kind of wow your new customers, because that's kind of firm part of the proposition. So you know that making sure that, yes, we are flexible enough to react to those challenges and to put a customer experience lens on how we handle those, but we don't get too far off track of what we are trying to deliver for the whole customer base.
You know, just hearing the examples that you've shared about these outside factors of things, these curveballs, you know, of course it's obvious when you say it about a steel shortage, but you know, these are all of the things in the background that, you know, when you're leading the customer you know, strategy. These are all real life problems that behind the scenes, there's a lot of people that are working hard to make sure the impact to the customer is minimal. So it's not easy delivering a great customer experience, is it? We've got the battle scars, Kate, haven't we? So just focusing on the pandemic again for a moment. Adaptations were made as a result of the pandemic. It had to be. But I guess with your customer teams, you know, what are the things that, from a way of working that you had to pivot to, that actually now will help you serve your customers better going forward? Therefore, are things you're going to adopt and take forward and strengthen? Are there any examples of things that you've done that actually pandemic was a bit of an accelerator and you're going to keep them?
Yeah, I mean, I never... You know, being in customer service for the number of years I've been here, I never thought we'd get to a situation where you would have customer contact centres working from home. What an amazing catalyst the pandemic was to go, so you can do it. I can't take any credit for the amazing work that the team did prior to me starting, but they lifted and shifted the contact centres and got everybody working from home really quickly, really seamlessly. We did keep one of our centres open, because we recognised that for some of our the demographic of some of our people, working from home was just not a practical option. So we, you know, we have absolutely had COVID safe measures in that office, but we enabled people to come back into the office to work because that was safer and better for them. So we've kind of had this very mini hybrid working. Most people were at home, few people in the office, but what we're entering into now is very much a hybrid approach, because I think we absolutely recognise for some people working from home has worked incredibly well, and you know the level of service that they've been able to offer because they're just more at peace with the world. You know, they're not running around like lunatics trying to spin all the plates that we all have to spin, has really worked. But we also know that for others that just was not working for them at all. So we are having this hybrid approach of people in the office for a few days and working from home for a few days, or office full time if that's what suits them best. I think, you know, the other things that we really kind of started to think about was how do you proactively get information out to customers? So where lockdowns were kind of happening, you know, almost with a day's notice, and you know, businesses would be shut, so how do you communicate to those customers that what we're going to do to support them and what their service is going to look like? So we, you know, we utilised as many different channels as we could to get those messages out, and that's something that we're continuing on with. You know, the storms that we've just had in the
I forgot about that one, it affect you as well.
Oh gosh, yes. So that was okay, quick, you know, like, okay, where are all those channels that we've been using through the pandemic? Let's reinvigorate those, let's get the message out there. So just that ability to kind of just think quickly or quicker about how do we get messages to customers, whereas I think pre-pandemic they didn't really have to do that.
And I guess opening up the lines of communication, just being a little bit more, just having more flexibility around that, getting to say, you know, getting the word out to more customers quickly and effectively through the digital channels as well as obviously the traditional. Okay, so bringing us to a bit of a close, be great to hear from you. You do a lot of reading, you shared that earlier, but from your perspective, what are the key predictions you would make for what's going to happen in the world of CX in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, it's a really hard one. I kind of think about that a lot around, okay, where is this going? And I think, I mean, CX does have a bit of a bad reputation in terms of, oh, it's just something that companies say they're doing in order to appease their customers, but the customer doesn't actually feel any different. And I think it's kind of going back to what I said earlier in the conversation, that the big organisations that have got it right and have been able to invest in it, I think they will probably completely blow my mind with what's going to come in the next 5 years. But for the rest of us mere mortals that are all scrabbling around to catch up, I think it is about really making sure that the proposition is for not just for the customer, but for the whole, you know, that kind of conscious capitalism piece, that it is for everybody. So, you know, we talk about customer centricity, but you don't kind of get customer centricity if you're not kind to your employees, and you can't invest in customer focused things if you're not, you know, delivering a great opportunity for your investors. So it's really looking at it in the round. And I think that's where CX needs to move to in the next few years, around, away from this, it's all about customer, because without those other pieces, you're not delivering the good service to customers, because you need all of those elements to play in. Yeah. I think the other piece is data. I think there's going to be some really big, tough questions around data, which also links into that kind of conscious, you know, what are we doing? Why are we asking for data? What are we doing with it? Are we being responsible? Are we, you know, you kind of go back into the older times of marketing, where it was all about, you know, just bang a load of marketing material out to customers, and that was marketing, through to kind of going, okay, what is it that customers need and want to hear from us, and making sure that we're doing that with a, you know, with the kind of the environment in mind, with communities in mind, as well as customers, employees and investors. So I think, yeah, that data piece, I think will be quite an interesting conversation going forward.
Okay. So my final question to you then is, you know, we started the podcast, you know, the sector perceived maybe not to be so CX-y. For the listeners that work in sectors out there that, again, might have that kind of tag, if you like, what would be your single bit of advice in terms of, regardless, you know, ensuring that customer experience is at the heart of the organisation for the customer and the people, to use your point?
Yeah, so I mean, my single piece of advice to anybody is that you need to get to your customers, and you know, you need to do that in whatever way suits your organisation. So for me, if I don't listen to a bunch of customer calls in a week, I feel like I haven't got my finger on the pulse. Like, what is going on? How are our customers feeling? What are they talking to us about? So listening to those calls, getting out into your organisation and seeing how it is to be a customer. If you can be a customer, mystery shopping, all of that stuff, so that you can really see and feel it from the customer side, because I think that's where the real stories come from. That's when you're able to articulate what it is that you're trying to fix, rather than it being, you know, this processes and, you know, this journey isn't quite right. If you can really bring that to life through what you've seen and experienced, I think that's my advice to anybody, particularly when it's not a CX-y type industry.
Well, you've inspired me for sure, so thank you for sharing with our listeners all of your great insight and bringing to life some of the fantastic stuff that, you know, Biffa and the waste management industry are doing for the environment and the customer.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, see you soon. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.